Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. We have great theme music. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, best-selling author of The Little Red Book of Selling, which happens to be the best-selling sales book of all time.
And I'm Jen Glackow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute, and this is Sell or Die, a show all about discussing the real world of sales. No bullshit, no tricks, just how to make sales on the street, whether you're in Cleveland or San Francisco.
Especially Cleveland.
Did you like that, Jeffrey?
I put that thank in there. You very kindly, Doug. You. Thank you very kindly.
Cleveland, that was a last minute change.
Cleveland has been revived. It would have been in Lake Erie along with the rest of the swill.
Any NBA fan listeners will know what we're talking about.
Exactly. And if you're not an NBA fan, it's okay. It's great living in the dark. We call this show Sell or Die because you're either selling or you're dying. There's no between. You're either in the groove or the other guy is. Second place in sales is first loser.
We're taking your questions online right now. If you have a question for us, tweet us at Gittimer or at Jen in NY Minute, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gittimer or facebook.com/Jen in a New York Minute. Use the
that's
hashtag.
That's a lot of places to go.
I know. Find us on Facebook. Dude. Find us on Twitter. But use the hashtag sell or die. And our producer, Doug. Hi, Doug. He's our amazing producer. We'll get your questions to us.
That's right. Hello, Jennifer, and hello, Jeffrey. Remember, everyone, you can listen to us live Wednesdays at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time at blogtalkradio.com/sellordie. Subscribe to us on iTunes or any of the popular podcast apps. Just search Sell or Die and have episodes downloaded to your computer or mobile device of choice. Jennifer, Jeffrey, what's going on in your sales world?
We're pretty much dead.
No. What?
Oh, no.
We are selling our asses off.
Oh, yeah. I'm popping down to Atlanta to talk to a bunch of Braves sellers to sell another couple hundred million dollars worth of suites. My favorite thing to do, talk to ball teams. Jenny?
I'm heading to New York tomorrow to do a bunch of sales calls. And
with sales balls, of course.
I'll be coming back with some sales orders.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So before we get into the show, I want to tell you about our favorite pre-show, post-show drink, which I am slowly becoming addicted to as of yesterday. Death Wish Coffee. This is not coffee. If you are bald, this will make your hair stand on end. It's the best coffee I have ever drunk, bar none. Death Wish Coffee. Strongest coffee in the world.
They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee. We drink it in the studio when we do the show. Actually, we sort of drink it all day long.
Right.
So go get your first bag of coffee. It looks like this if you're on Periscope watching us.
Go to deathwishcoffee.com.
Yep.
I got to tell you about a couple of other exciting things happening at the Gittimer Learning Academy. We have the sales assessment and the sales certification up online. So as a salesperson, you can find out where you are and how to get Jeffrey Gittimer certified if you just listen to Jennifer.
Oh, okay, sure. Go to jeffreygittimer.com/mastery. jeffreygittimer.com/mastery.
We've all taken the sales assessment here in the office. It's awesome.
Yes,
and really in-depth.
You get like a 40-page report telling you
it's totally cool
how good or not good you are.
Coming up, we have a great show today. Have you ever given a gift to a client? How come? What happened? It can be a powerful sales tool, even if your client isn't C-level. We talked with gifting expert, my buddy John Rulin, about how and when to gift. He's the author of a brand new book, just launched now. You can get it on Amazon, Giftology, G-I-F-T-O-L-O-G-Y with a little hyphen in there. This will change your sales game with respect to how the client perceives you.
Plus, reports are that LinkedIn is being acquired by Microsoft. Does that mean anything for those who use it?
It's going to be a mystery for about a year until Microsoft comes in with a big foot.
Well, we'll talk about it later on our show.
They're going to let LinkedIn go exactly as they are. for at least 1 year. They left that part out. So let's get to it. It's time to sell or die.
It's time to go out to our sales friends at reddit.com/r/sales.
Oh.
Yeah, we love our Reddit fans. Thank you for sticking with us. We want to get more of your burning sales questions online and on the show. Doug, what's our first question?
First question comes from Reddit user CyberRico. CyberRico asks, what advice would you give to create an impending event in an opportunity?
What kind of a pending event? Is it like a...
Impending event.
I know. What kind of impending event is
it? That's a great question. What is an impending event?
It's going to be a bunch of layoffs. That's an impending event. It kind of falls around like a rumor. Is somebody going to do something different, like launch a new product?
Well, salespeople create impending events to get to close the deal sometimes.
Oh, you mean like a manipulative impending event? Like if you don't buy now, the price is going to go up on Tuesday.
Right. Or they might say, I want to help you. And if you don't buy now, the price could go up. It's not me. It's the company.
It's a price, yeah. I think there are two kinds of impending events, real and contrived. And I think a customer can smell an impending event.
Okay, so when I worked in software sales and we needed to get our teachers trained on the software, mm-hmm. we had real events. We had to train them before the school year started so that they could kick off the school year with our product. If not, we would have to wait for a teacher day in the middle of the year, and everyone really wants to start off the school year with that product.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a real event because it was their event. It was all about them and their needs. And it was easy for me to say, well, when would you like your training to begin? And that was the impending event that helped me close the sale.
I like it. Yeah, I think impending events should be /real and /bullshit.
So what would a bullshit one be?
The price is going to go up on Tuesday if you don't buy today.
So
we're out of stock. And you can be first online.
So you're saying a bullshit one would be about the salesperson.
Do you remember when we were at that store, the furniture store, and they were trying to tell us that you couldn't get this or you couldn't get that?
Mm-hmm.
Until we said, if we don't get this, we're not going to buy. And they go, oh, well, then you can buy.
Yeah, I remember that.
So if you are thinking about impending events and you look at it and go, really, all the impending events that I can think of are bullshit impending events, what alternatives do you have if you don't want to go that route and you don't have a real impending event? What other routes could you go?
You find the customer's genuine motive for wanting to purchase or needing to purchase, and you focus on that instead of your sales manipulative crap. Real simple.
And their timeline. Their timeline should create the impending event.
Right. When do they want to take ownership?
Right. So that was a great question. We're going to answer more of your questions from Reddit and from social media later in the show. So stick around. And if you're listening live, send us your sales questions right now on Twitter, at Gittimer,
at
Jen in a New York Minute, or on Facebook,
at NewJerseyTurnpike.com.
Wherever you go, just include the hashtag sell or die.
Okay, cool.
If you're watching us on Periscope right now, listen up. Hey, we're going to be signing off the Periscope
feed.
Wait,
we sent you some love things. Get the heart button or something. Come on.
Well, we can't see it, so we have no idea. But you can still listen live to the rest of the show, including our talk with sales author John Rulin, by going to blogtalkradio.com/sell or die. That's blogtalkradio.com/sell or die. And I see Chris about to turn you off. So bye,
no,
Periscope.
don't turn us off.
What?
No. last week we talked to our good buddy and a good friend of the show, John Rulin. He is the author of the new book Giftology. He's all about how generosity and the act of gift giving can develop lasting relationships. And from a sales perspective, genuinely make more sales, build a deeper relationship, earn referrals, get word of mouth advertising, and of course, make a few more bucks.
Yeah, he believes in the power of gifting so much, he actually gifted the galley copy of his book. Jeffrey, a galley copy is?
That's the copy of the book before it is printed.
And normally, what do people do?
They galley it.
So he went above and beyond with his galley gift, and that's where we began our conversation.
Oh, yeah, he did. He sent us that real cool package.
Yeah.
With the book in it. That's totally cool.
And I had galley copies that were handmade with leather bags and linen boxes that cost a couple hundred dollars a piece. So when somebody gets the gift of the book. It feels like it's the nicest book they've ever seen, or damn close. And so, like, when I was on Lewis Howes' podcast, he's like, "This is your galley copy?" He's like, "I've never even, most people's books aren't this nice, and we put people's names on it, their initials on the bag. I mean, everything was handmade." So we're pouring all of our own, you know, personal secrets into gifting into the book launch. So hopefully, that's adding an element of, you know, class that I think other people are like, "Well, paperback's fine, or the whatever's fine." So yeah, the feedback, I guess the short answer is it's been really, really positive.
And to get to the long answer, it's not just the gift, it's the way you give it. Like if I get a watch and it's packed inside of a bag with some tissue paper and it's loose, that's one way of getting a watch. Or if I get it in a box that says Cartier on the outside of it, and there's like all this little felt, red felt velvet stuff in the inside, and it's got, the, you know, it all stands up and it's all stuck in there, just perfecto mundo. And, you know, it's all in the presentation as well as the gift.
Presentation's everything. Like, and, you know, people say don't judge a book by its cover, but you do. Like, you're a human being.
Everyone does.
Visual.
Yeah.
They're only talking about people in bars.
But
that's so true. Oh, gosh. It blows me away. Yeah, you never give a Rolex or a Cartier in a paper bag, and yet how you hand somebody something like conveys the value and all the little things like that. So,
and your pride. You know, the cool thing about what you just described is people get books in the mail. I don't want to say all the time, but the people you're sending them to get books in the mail all the time, and so. What you're making them do or what they're wanting to do once they receive your package is they actually want to look at it. They don't just they want to look at it. And then the first thing they do, I guarantee it, is show someone else. How cool is this? I got this in the mail. It has my initials on it, has my name. I mean, that and all of a sudden you sent it to one person and now two people know. And I guarantee that second person's telling someone else too.
Roland, John, before you were born, I was receiving books from all kinds of publishers because I was writing a column, and they would send me like a preview copy or a copy of somebody's new book, and it was with a letter that was signed the marketing team, not like a human being. It was an absolute drivel written letter, and the book was in an envelope that was usually dented by the post office, and the book was unsigned by the author. So I decided when I was going to do my books that they were going to go in a box. It was going to go in with some cool stuff like a billion. We had shredded up money that we got from the mint. So there was this huge pound of shredded, not a pound, but, you know, like a handful of shredded up money, a box of mints that was customized, like worth a mint from, we did them with Altoids, but we put our label on the top of it. And then
I've seen your mints.
And then an autographed copy of the book.
Yep.
And this got attention from people for an extra $2.
Isn't that silly? Where people go cheap, I try to figure out how much money I can spend. And when everybody's going expensive, I try to go, I don't even do it. I'm like, why would I just become part of the noise? And like now mine's 1% better. I look for ways where I can spend an extra $50 and I get like, and I'm 500 times better.
And with your book Giftology, you have to make it look like a gift, not a piece of crap.
Yes.
When you give somebody a gift and the gift is quality, you can't help but at least subliminally think of that person every time you either look at, read, or use the gift.
Yep.
I have to tell you that the Cutco ice cream scoop that we have in our house is, it should be labeled the John Rulin ice cream scoop. Because every time I use it, I think of you. Unfortunately.
Well, fortunately, And is there John Rulin logo on it or what's on it?
Actually, there's no logo on it.
Exactly. That's part of why Giftology works is we go against every marketing, you know, 101 book. Like we teach people to do the opposite of what the norm is, which most people would say in order for it to be marketing, it has to have, you know, the Rulin Group brand on it. But if I give something nice enough And oftentimes ice cream scoop isn't engravable very well, but most of the time I put the other person's name on it. And like you said, it becomes an artifact and used all the time. And even if you don't want to remember me, you still remember me because it's...
Yeah, can't help it.
So is that the philosophy you talk about in your book?
Yeah, I mean, the principles of giftology are, it's our playbook of how we've landed 25 pro sports teams, how we've built relationships with thought leaders and influencers around the world. And one of them is a gift by its very nature should be all about the recipient, not about the giver. And most people confuse that and they end up doing a marketing or promotional item or something all about themselves.
Right. They got to put their name on it.
You make it all about them. So you never go to a wedding and engrave compliments of Jeffrey Gittimer on a Tiffany's box.
Wait, I do. Oh, what are you talking about? I do it all the time.
Maybe you get away with it. But in general, most people, that'd be the tackiest thing in the world.
It would be so tacky.
Oh, yeah.
But business people do that all the time. Like, thank you so much for your $1 million in business. Here's a bar of chocolate or a bottle of wine with our name on it.
Yeah.
Like, who feels appreciated?
We got one this past week.
We did. We chucked it.
You chucked it. There you go.
Yeah.
So billions of dollars get spent to offend people versus appreciate and deepen the relationship. And that's our giftology is all the questions you need to ask yourself. And it's our playbook of how you love on people well with gifting. Because most people think it's a nice to, not a have to. And so most people don't, they delegate it to an assistant and they do it horribly. Like they suck at showing appreciation. But nobody ever writes a thank you note saying, I chucked your bottle of wine. It was absolutely horrendous. I can't even believe you sent me this. Like, that would be the meanest thing in the world, but that's what goes through somebody's head.
Yeah.
When they, a gift like that.
Like, I'll come to a hotel room and they'll have a gift of a bottle of wine for me. And it's the cheapest ass wine on the planet. It's like $9 bottle of wine. Like, dude, if you're going to give me wine. For an extra $5, I would be, you know, or find out what kind I like.
Right.
Yeah, they send you a bottle of Chardonnay, and meanwhile, you're like, I only drink cab. Or, you know.
No, I only drink wine with the word France on the label.
Well, that's the thing is people, they cut corners, and that's one of the things we talk about in the book is asking yourself, what's the most you can do? And most people, they ask themselves, what's the least I can get away with when they're gifting?
Okay, let me just throw this at you. They could have sent me a bottle of California wine. Scratched out California and written France in with a Sharpie, and I would have loved it. I would have
laughed.
I would have talked about it, right?
But because they would have been thinking about you and what you like and
they
what
knew
you
me.
Care about,
right? They knew
exactly.
Me. All we're saying is, I know you.
So why do you think they try to cut corners? Do you think they don't care, or you think they don't realize how important gifting can be?
I think it's because they don't think it matters. They think here's what they say: it's just a token. Well, nobody would say their relationships are token, or they say it's the thought that counts, but it's not the thought that counts. It's the thoughtful thought that counts. So they don't realize what they're communicating by doing a gift card or even I don't do any consumables because it's like, you know, you can offend people so much in 2016 with like, well, I'm on a diet or I'm not drinking right now.
Right.
Or
I'm
an alcoholic.
Box of cheese.
So we talk about in the book, like consumables are one of the worst things you can give because there's so many ways. One, you only get one impression. Like, it better be a freaking amazing bottle of wine.
It better be Harry and David.
And even Harry and David, it's like it's consumed and gone and forgotten about. And maybe the pair show up, you know, beaten up, or maybe you're not eating fruit right now.
Don't knock Harry and David. I like Harry and David. If you're listening to this and you're wondering, what should I get for Gittimer? I'll take a box of Harry and David pears anytime.
We love those pears. But here's the thing. John has a great point. Once they're gone, they're gone. That's it.
Yeah,
okay. The water bottle he sent us or the knife that we had.
Or the ice cream scooper.
You use it over and over again and every time you think of him.
Okay, so let me throw something at you. You're talking about radical generosity. Does that ring a bell to you?
Yeah.
Okay, so rather than say how is radical generosity different, I'm going to challenge you with radical generosity. I'm going to ask you to send me 6 ice cream scoops without anything on them.
Yeah.
I will then send them to 6 CEOs that I know and challenge them that I dare you to use this scoop and not think about me every time you use it. How about sending 100 to your customers?
Yeah, how about I send you 60? How about we add a few zeros?
Let's go for 6. Let's go for 6 to start out with. I may not be able to afford the postage.
I'll cover that too. My UPS. I'll give you my UPS number, no problem. So So radical generosity would be just add some zeros and you ask for six, I'll send you 600. Whatever you need. I always like to take it up a few more notches. So I love that experiment. That's a great experiment.
We want to back up a little bit and get some history from you. How did you get started in sales?
I started the way that about 1.5 million other college kids started. I started with needing to make a buck in college and wanting to get some experience with Cutco, the knife company that is based out of New York. And the intention was just to get through a summer, make a few dollars, and survive the 3 months of selling knives in people's homes.
And sell the knives to your relatives and both of your friends, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the hope. And I didn't even think I would get that far. Because my mom, who's owned the product at that point, she had owned it for 40 years, was like, none of our friends can afford this stuff. Do you think you're going to pay for med school selling knives? And she's normally pretty encouraging, but she's also, like, she grew up one of 13 kids on the farm, so she's pretty practical. Like, she outfitted us all in, like, you know, for $5, she could outfit all six kids for, like, 6 months.
Wow.
So she's frugal. So I went in and I did 40 appointments in my first 10 days. I drove sometimes 3 hours to appointments and was able to realize that, one, the knives are really good. Two, the training was fantastic. And I broke the Ohio record for the company. And early in that period, I ended up selling a set to my girlfriend's dad at the time, which, you know, not a big deal. Sell something to somebody's, you know, the girl you're dating's dad. But he was radically generous. He bought a set for his three daughters that were unmarried. And then he asked the question that is so powerful. He's like, John, I want to help you. What else can I do? But, you know, the stuff is going to last forever. What else can I do? And that got my wheel spinning of maybe we could engrave something and he could give it away to his clients, because he was always giving things away, no strings attached. And he ended up coming back to me and saying, John, can I give away paring knives instead of pocket knives? And I was like, why? And he said, well, all of my clients are married, and I find that if you take care of the inner circle, everything else takes care of itself. So that was like my, like, epiphany, like the radical, like, lightning struck moment that changed my life forever.
Cool. And even though you didn't marry his daughter, he was still a nice guy, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm doing a book signing tomorrow, and I'm doing the launch for the book.
Wait, did you marry his daughter? Wait a second. Did you marry
No.
him?
No. No, I didn't. No. I got my heart broken. I had the ring in the whole nine yards. I had the ring. She broke my heart, but I'm still friends with him. I'm actually going back to Amish country in the heart of Ohio to launch the book with a book signing and a give back to the community. Cause a lot of what I learned from this middle of nowheresville, Ohio. So even though, I didn't marry his daughter, we met Lindsay. We met through, one of the reasons I met my wife is because of you, because I wanted to come meet you at the AgriGold event.
Oh yeah.
And, So I can thank you for meeting my wife and have three kids under five. I don't know if I've ever shared in depth.
Should I send you an invoice? You seem like a willing guy.
I think you probably
have a feeling, knowing John, he's already sent you some gifts.
Yeah, that's true. I wanted to go back to your cheap gift versus expensive gift. One of the reasons that people buy cheap gifts is that they think of it as an obligatory gift. I have to buy this guy something because it's Christmas and he's my customer.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what can I, quote, get away with? Does he like scotch or does he like bourbon? And the answer is, I like Perrier. So,
yeah, it's obligatory. Like, I send out $250,000 a year with the gifts. And we've been written about in The Observer and other magazines about being the Grinch, or the, like, we're killing Christmas because we don't send, as a gifting company, this is heresy, we don't send one gift, not one, between Thanksgiving and Christmas. I spend all $250,000 a year on gifts to our clients, our prospects, our suppliers, our board of directors, our mentors, between January and October. And it's all at times when they're not expecting it. It's all just because. I'm not asking for anything in return. It's a just because I love you. I just, you know, notice any of the gifts I send you, there's no like, hey, will you do this for me? Or, hey, thanks for the referral. It's, hey, I was thinking of you.
Yeah.
Like, that's way more meaningful than, hey, you sent me a referral. Now I feel like I have to do something. Like a gift after a referral is the worst time to send a gift.
So how important is personalization in the gifting process?
Massively. Everybody wants to, you know, the reason that there's an American Express Black Card and there's people giving $100 million to hospitals and education isn't just for philanthropy. Like, people's legacy is tied to their name. And if it's tied enough for somebody to give $100 million away to an institution so their name's on the side of the building, you better freaking find a way to personalize the gift so they feel like it's the only gift that was sent out was just made for them.
I agree.
The personalization of things is of the utmost importance. Unless you want people to re-gift it, because people can get stuff all the time. But when you personalize it, now it becomes an artifact or something they're going to pass down to their kids or grandkids.
Yeah, yeah, regifting something is tacky when it's already got your name on it.
You have to find someone with the same initials.
Or the same last name.
I'm sure it happens. We've had that happen a couple different times. We've sent out gifts to people, like on Valentine's Day, and we've had the guys take it home to their wives and use it as the Valentine's Day gift because it just had their name on it. And the wife was unsuspecting. They weren't expecting to get a corporate gift. At Valentine's Day, we've had people re-gift it to their spouses as the gift that they bought for them, which is, I think, is horribly tacky, but it helped a few of my clients get out of the doghouse. I don't say anything. I'm like, dude, if you can get away with it,
that's crazy.
Horribly tacky is a euphemism for cheap bastard, correct?
Yeah, I tell people I don't recommend giving coffee cups away, but if you're gonna give something away like that, like instead of giving the $10 one, like instead of giving a $10 water bottle, we send a $50 water bottle. And when they get it, it's now the only one that they use. So even if you do something that is commonplace, if you personalize it and do it first class, it replaces everything else that they use, which is the only way we'll do a gift. It has to be best in class.
So you recommend not giving coffee cups away. Are there any other kind of items? We talked about perishables, but are there any other types of items that you would suggest not giving?
Yeah, I have a top 10 list that we actually, inside the book, it's one of the bonuses, like the top 10 worst gifts to give, categorically.
Underwear?
lingerie, underwear, yes, that would be in this. That's not a real good business gift. Okay.
What are the other nine?
Well, one of them that most people fall into is Apple. I see a lot of people giving away Apple. And when car dealerships are offering free test drives to come or free Apple products, when if you just come test drive their product, it's no longer cool, sexy, or unique when other places are giving away like candy. So Apple products, I think, are way overgiven. And you spend a lot of money to have something that expires in 6 months. I think a lot of apparel is a bad gift. One, because it's typically overbranded. It's like you go to the golf tournament and you get the polo shirt with the logo the size of a softball. But even if it's not branded, you have issues with sizing. People give it out all the time. So they already have more polo shirts than they can possibly wear in one lifetime. So I avoid apparel. There's a whole top 10 list of gifts that we, in our opinion, are horrible.
But if you take an ordinary thing and you add a little bit of creativity to it, you can still get away with giving away the ordinary thing. For example, our coffee mug says coffee is for closers, and it's branded with my sales caffeine thing, and salespeople will pay me $10 for it.
Well, the rule of thumb is if adding your logo or adding the brand, does it add value or take value away from
right.
the item? Are they more likely to use it or less likely? So you've created a culture and a brand. Like, it's almost like being in the club. It's like being in a fraternity, or like we have, you know, the Chicago Bears and the Chicago Cubs are clients of ours, and we've done gifting for them. Well, their logo adds value to the product.
Is there ever a situation that you can think of where giving a gift is not appropriate?
Oh, for sure. Well, first off, what I love about gifting is everybody talks about the Walmarts of the world and they're afraid to gift because people can't accept gifts. So they end up avoiding the topic altogether, or they go like really lame.
Or they use it as an excuse not to give them.
Yeah, they use it as an excuse. So if everybody was amazing at gift giving, it wouldn't work. It would just be part of the noise, like going out to dinner and doing trade shows and all the other things that everybody does that just doesn't work. And so but there's risk involved. We had one client that was using gifting as a prospecting tool to go after like the 50 wealthiest people up in the Pacific Northwest. I won't say the city.
But Seattle? Is it Seattle?
No, it's not Seattle.
Is it Portland?
I can't tell you.
Okay.
But they were going after the 50 wealthiest people, and I said, you don't know these people. You're going to send them 3 gifts in a row. You're going to get 20% of the gifts back. And they knew it going into it, but their main sales guy freaked out when some of the gifts started showing up. And I said, 80% of the people are loving it. Like, you're getting like COOs of Fortune 500 companies to respond back for a meeting. Like, this is amazing. Don't focus on the 20% that send the gift back. They might be going through a divorce, or maybe like one of the companies was going through an investigation for fraud. They're not going to accept the gift. Like,
right.
You didn't know that was going on. So I tell people, depending upon who you're gifting to, you're going to get between 1% and 20% of the gifts back, depending upon if they're a client, a prospect. You know, most clients won't send the gifts back. You'll get 1% from clients. But on the prospecting side, you know, like, you're going to get some gifts back, and that's just part of focus on the 80%. So,
and also focus on your gift list to start out with.
Well, that's the other thing is most people try to send 10,000 gifts at the same level to everybody. And I'm like, focus on your top 10 to 20% of your relationships, whether it's a client or a prospect, and go laser focused and go all in versus doing a mediocre gift to everybody. Like, hey, here's a cheap pair of shoes from Walmart. I want to get my foot in the door. Like, that's the tackiest, cheapest thing on the planet. You're not going to get responses from that. Whereas you do something world class to maybe 50 people, you're going to get a response, and you're going to get the return is 100x.
And the more personalized the not just the gift, but personalized the message with something about them, and you win.
Yep.
So it can't just be a massive gift give. It has to be a massive personalized gift given. It personalization is not just their first name. It's something about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about them. You don't talk about your company and what you can do. You show them that you understand who they are, what they do, what challenges they might be, having, or you just say if it's a client, I love working with you. I love partnering with you. It's a just because versus a all about me and my theme and my blah, blah, blah.
One gift that I gave that actually got me a client when I walked in the door, it was a big bank in Wisconsin outside of the city of Milwaukee. And I knew the guy had gone to Wisconsin. It was a big Green Bay Packer fan, and he liked chocolate. So I sent him 2 hats full of chocolate footballs.
Yeah.
Hey, he loves chocolate, loves the Packers.
Right. I walked in, and he was just flabbergasted that I would have spent a whole $40. You know what I mean? It might have been 50, counting the chocolate. But it was, he just was blown away by that. And that got me instant rapport with them. I didn't have to fight over anything. I just sat down and talked.
Well, that's the thing. Some people will reach out to us and they're like, hey, we want to do this gift. I'm like, well, are you world-class in your other ways? Because if you suck at service or you suck at whatever else, and then you try to use a Band-Aid with a gift, it can actually make it worse. A gift is meant to just accelerate or exemplify. It's like the little cherry on top of the sundae. But if you don't have all the other things dialed in about your business or your sales process, and you try to like have gifts be like your miracle worker, like, you still have to be able to build rapport and deliver on what your
value
proposition is. I agree. If you suck, you should wait a little while till you don't suck to give out a gift.
Yeah, invest your money in not sucking and then give a gift.
Hire a friendly person, then give the gift. So how many of these books are you going to be selling versus how many of these books are you going to give away?
Well, what's interesting is we did order 1,000 books with the leather bag in the box that I'm talking about, because after I saw the response initially from people that have received, hundreds or thousands of books, they're like, you're going to get authors that are going to call you and say, can you just do the packaging and the book? Can you just do this for us?
Yeah, you'll be in the business.
Maybe I need to dial this up. So every week we'll probably send out 5 to 10 books to people that we respect, admire. And the book isn't going to ask them for a blurb or anything. It's just going to say, hey, love what you do. I think you'll resonate with the values in this book. And thanks for what you're doing, and give them the book. So we're probably going to send out, in the next year, probably 500 of those kind of books. And then from there, I'm not sure. We've already pre-sold, a few thousand books to begin with. We're looking to hit Wall Street Journal, the bestseller list. But
I would also tell you that your book is amazing. You're going to sell a hell of a lot of this to people that can actually not just read the book, but buy the book, implement the book, and use the thought processes behind this. You put a lot of time into writing this book.
Yeah, it's there's not going to be a giftology too. Like we didn't hold anything back. We laid out every tip, secret sauce. It's all, it's been a labor of love and pain and agony and the last 5 years. So I'm excited. It's finally birthing it and giving it out to the world to hopefully use and be radically generous with whoever those important relationships are. So thanks for saying such kind things about it, Jeffrey. You've definitely been a mentor and a friend and somebody that's inspired me to actually get the book done versus just talk about it.
John, what is the most interesting gift that you've ever received?
You know what? I actually, timing-wise, it's really interesting you asked that. Yesterday, my wife, we went back to Ohio, we're launching the book, and for Father's Day, I love basketball. I love sports, but basketball is my thing. I'm from Ohio, so the Cavs are playing. So she surprises me with a day all around friends and basketball. And so a lot of our friends are spread all over the place. We had brunch together as a surprise, 30 people at this brunch place. And then she proceeds to hand me a box. Now, I grew up a poor farm boy. I love Jordan, but I couldn't never, we couldn't afford Jordans. So we open it up, and it's a box of the original Jordans I wanted when I was 16 years old. So 20 years ago, the never been worn, not the retro ones, the original ones, but the receipt from Chicago that this guy bought, the original Jordans. And the theme for that pair of Jordans was class act. So it was tied into your book is a class act. Your book's going live tomorrow. And then she had arranged with one of my friends who organized basketball games all the time, some of my closest friends, to play basketball together with family. And then the Cavs go and freaking win. And I wish I could say she orchestrated that. But the fact of that gift, I mean, I got tears in my eyes multiple times for multiple reasons. But that was the one of the nicest gifts that I've ever been given, and it was given 24 hours ago.
I got to tell you that you can't see this because it's a verbal audio thing. I'm wearing a Cavaliers T-shirt this morning because I was standing up and down screaming for the Cavs last night. Our producer will cut this out of the podcast because he was for the Warriors and I won a small bet. But I have the original LeBron James Reebok T-shirt on from when he originally was drafted by the Cavaliers.
No way.
Yep.
That
23 on the front, James on the back. Cleveland Cavaliers. I've been a LeBron James fan since he was in high
school. Rubbing in Doug's face.
Well, since he was in high school.
Jeffrey was the only one that didn't burn that shirt.
I was happy LeBron, when he went to the Heat.
When LeBron left.
I was happy he went to the Heat. He got to win two championships down there. Leave him alone. He could have won three. Easy.
Yeah, and he came back and won one for the city.
Yeah, I just wanted LeBron to win his third championship and save the city of Cleveland. Because it would have sunk without that championship.
The energy in Ohio right now, there's nothing like everybody. I don't care if it's somebody that's 90-year-old grandma. Everybody right. is there's a bounce in everybody's step in Ohio right now. It's the craziest thing. It's so cool to witness.
Well, Jeffrey, we now know what gift you should actually give John, and that's the shirt off your own back. Maybe wash it first.
Very funny. But extremely, in my opinion, appealing to a salesperson who doesn't quite know what to do when it's that moment of should I or shouldn't I. I think you need to ask the customer if they're allowed to accept gifts, first of all. But once that's been established and the dollar amount has been established, go for it.
I think whether you're a salesperson or not, it doesn't even matter. This is a life lesson.
Here is the ice cream scoop.
Oh, yeah.
It is arguably the most important item in our drawer besides the thing I take corn out of the pot with. But it's so well designed. When you put it down on the table, it doesn't hit the ground. It's got
the scoopy part doesn't hit the table.
The
so
scoopy
that it,
part. I was trying to.
That's a very technical term. I used to sell Cutco, and these were one of my favorite items to sell because they're amazing.
Here's the deal, though. this is a not an ice cream scooper. It's a John Rulon memento. Like, I can't take this out of the drawer and not think, oh, John gave me this. And I think that
if he could have, he would have engraved your name right here. But he said these are one of the harder things to engrave.
Yeah, but he said it didn't have to.
Right.
Remember,
you think
he didn't have to put his name on it.
No, your name.
It doesn't have to have my name
on it. I know, but it would have been cool.
He could have put chocolate in there. Anyway.
So what's the coolest gift that you guys have ever given to a client?
Wow.
Or the most unique or the most creative?
I don't know. I send people stuff. Most of the time, people, from a me standpoint, receiving gifts, someone will be in Philadelphia and they'll send me tasty cakes, butterscotch crimpets, if you're listening.
Or if they're in Chicago, they'll send me
Garrett's popcorn, right? People do nice things, and I try to do something that is somewhat memorable to them. What I've done in the past is I try to find out if it's a man who their favorite athlete was and send them a signed photograph from that athlete.
I like that. Jen, real
quick.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty cool.
What's your
cool? I had a client who loved chocolates, and I sent him a box of chocolate, and then when he opened it up, it had a video of me thanking him for hiring me and for the great seminar. You recorded that video.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. No, that was a cool gift, yeah. And it's unique, and when they get it, they've never seen anything like it, and they attach that to your
exactly.
brand.
And he called me up, and he told me, the first thing I did was gather everyone from the office and show it to them.
Yeah,
cool.
And Jen, the video was really cool. It says, have a piece of chocolate. Not you, buddy. You're
all right. So John Rulon Giftology, you can buy Giftology on Amazon and learn more at giftologybook.com. So some big news came down a few weeks ago.
Ooh,
Microsoft is interested in buying LinkedIn.
No, they didn't interested in buying them. They bought them.
All right.
So now tons of salespeople use LinkedIn for networking, correct? And we have a webinar on it.
We do.
And it's amazing.
We have a webinar this Friday.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You and I do?
You and I.
Okay. So we don't really talk about what's going to happen with Microsoft because nobody knows. And I'm not one of those guys that wants to guess like, well, a year from now, you know, your LinkedIn account is going to cost you $500. But it might.
No, but it's interesting to think about, like, you know, right now you can embed YouTube videos. There's all sorts of partnerships that they have or integrations that you can hook stuff up into your LinkedIn, like SlideShare. So what's going to happen with Microsoft Documents or PowerPoints?
They'll figure out a way to screw it up. They will figure out a way to screw it up.
You know?
Because Microsoft and YouTube are not pals.
Well, and people are wondering, I think, about Microsoft CRM and if that's going to get integrated in any way. So, yeah, it's definitely, I think if you're on LinkedIn, it's definitely something to pay attention to.
Oh, without for sure.
Doubt. Yeah, without for it. Sure. In the meantime, though, use it to generate leads, and we're going to share with you how to do that on our webinar.
So some people are asking where to go to sign up for the webinar, and the answer is jeffreygittimer.com/gold.
I love that. Okay, cool.
Can you give a preview tip, something that was, or maybe something you didn't discuss on the LinkedIn webinar that you'd like to?
Sure. We were talking about, we did not have enough time to look at the recommendations and referrals and endorsements. If you're on LinkedIn and you get these endorsements for, you know, that you're good at it, that's one thing. But if you get a written recommendation from somebody, that's a whole other thing.
It's the endorsements part is good because it will add to your SEO.
Yeah.
So as long as you have keywords in there that actually are meaningful to how people might search for you, then let people endorse you all day long. Get 99 plus, get 300 endorsements. Great. But for recommendations, you're right, Jeffrey, you have to earn those. And I think we talked about a little bit how to earn them.
I think we did, but I think you just earn them. I think if somebody recommends you, it's because they think, oh, yeah, he's good at that or she's good at that, as opposed to it's like a mercy recommendation. You know what I mean? That's not what I want. But before they had that endorsement thing, you had to get someone to physically write something for you, and then you could post it up.
Well, there's so much value. Wouldn't you rather read someone else's testimonial than just a check mark?
Sure. I would rather watch it. I would rather have them put a video up, but that's, you know, they haven't got to that point yet. And maybe
you have videos with testimonials.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're on your LinkedIn.
They are on my LinkedIn. So you can go there and click around and you'll find. Actually, we put on my new LinkedIn page, my updated LinkedIn page, which happened to coincide with this webinar.
How great.
It's an unbelievable coincidence. I just did a seminar with 750 people in the room, all millennials. And what happened was they went nuts at the end of the seminar, stood up, screamed the whole nine yards. And so I grabbed my iPhone and videotaped it. And that's part of the LinkedIn page is what do people feel about me when I'm done my talk?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's exceptionally powerful to be able to put that up on a video.
If you watch that video, you can feel the room.
You can feel the heat.
And it's better than any word of any person describing it.
I'm the greatest or a 30-second standing ovation.
Exactly.
Come on. Exactly.
With the crowd goes wild.
Yeah.
Hey, Jen, what do you think one thing that people that you consult with on LinkedIn, what's one thing that they're not doing that they could be doing, something small?
Okay. So people make their LinkedIn page about them and they look at it as if it's their resume. This is not your resume, even if you're looking for a job. This is how you can help other people. And although you might be writing about similar things, the way you position them is very different. And so your LinkedIn page, check out Jeffrey's. It's all about how you can help other people. And that's one small thing that they can do.
One thing you can look for is see how many times the word I appears or the word me appears or the word we appears. And you'll see that it's way too many times.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what do people have to do to register for this webinar? Because I know, I mean, obviously, there's a lot more information in there, right?
Are you asking personally? Or is this
I'd like to attend. Look, I need to improve my LinkedIn is what I'm saying.
Yes, you do.
Okay. So go to Jeffrey. JeffreyGittimer.com/gold.
That's all you got to do. And you'll miraculously get to a landing page that will allow you to register for very little money and give you an opportunity to see all the rest of the Gittimer Gold webinars, which are a plethora of stuff that you can turn into money.
Yeah, and I think that's the page for all the webinars. If you have any trouble and just want to register for this one webinar, call Jeffrey's office, 704-333-1112. Someone is standing by at all times to help.
A friendly human being.
All right,
I want to
cool.
give you one more preview. We are going to document the SEO process that is going to take us from, if you Google Jeffrey Gittimer, you're going to get 300,000 things, all nice things, positive things, no negative things. But if you Google sales training, of which I'm the best in the world, I'm Jack. I'm like on page three somewhere down on the, no, actually page two, somewhere in the, you know, in the where no one ever looks. So I'm partnering with the guy. And Jen is partnering with the same guy, and we're going to advance our name to page one organically, legally, and hopefully profitably, because 14,000 people Google sales training weekly. That's amazing. So I want to lead them to my online training at Gittimer Learning Academy. Jen wants to lead them to somebody to take a seminar or webinar on LinkedIn, and we're going to make it happen.
Yep, or talk, but yeah, exactly. Yep. Okay, so let's wrap things up by answering more of your questions from social media.
No.
Yes.
All right.
Our friends over at reddit.com/r/sales. Yeah. Who's up first, Doug?
Up first on Reddit, Sean, who says he loves the show. And he asks, what are your favorite sales acceleration tool?
The biggest sales acceleration tool that I know in the world is stop crapping around with people at a low level and meet with the CEO. That will accelerate your your sales times 1,000. The CEO can either decide or take you down to someone who's responsible for the decision. That will accelerate the sales cycle down to one-on-one.
Okay, so I agree. I think that
he took
Sean,
that very metaphorically.
However, Sean is maybe referring to the types of tools we saw when we went to Max Atchler's Sales Hackers Conference.
There were
all these vendors there who had booths with different forms of sales acceleration tools. So, for example, there was one company that had a, what's their name? You're able to write in play-by-play and give coaching advice while someone else is on a sales call.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool for a sales manager to be able to do. You're instead of being in their ear, you're on the screen and, you know, commenting play-by-play. And then we love DocuSend.
Yeah, it's DocSend.
DocSend.
DocSend allows you to send your proposal.
It is DocSend.
Yeah. Yeah. You send your proposal to the customer and the sender can see exactly when it's opened, exactly what page they're on, and exactly how long they're spending on that page. But that's not the coolest part. DocSend has a slideshow that the salesperson can tell the prospect on the phone, go to DocSend or, you know, go to your website, go to jeffreygittimer.com/ and your name, Bob. And a slideshow pops up, and it's for Bob. It's freaky. And it will absolutely revolutionize the way that sales follow-up call is made.
So their website says, DocSend makes salespeople more effective by enabling them to track, control, send, and present sales materials with real-time document analytics. It's really cool. Check it out, DocSend.
Totally cool.
All right.
So that's where we were. And
love that question.
No, but the Sales Machine event itself was pretty darn cool. It was, got to see Seth Godin.
Mm-hmm.
Got to see really nice.
Simon Sinek,
who was okay.
He was good, Jeffrey.
I liked Seth Godin an awful lot. And
It sounded like you said you don't like Seth, and I know you do like
Seth. I love Seth.
I know. You should clarify that.
Seth. Yeah. I love Seth Godin. He's brilliant. And he is... as good a speaker as exists in that world.
Cool.
Tim Sanders.
I was just going to say, Max's website, saleshacker.com, has a lot of information about sort of the latest sales acceleration tools. So that's another great
resource.
Yeah,
he's up with the game of the
totally
sales
up
acceleration
with it. He's a millennial's millennial.
For sure. And I think he has another conference coming up sometime in maybe September in San Francisco or something.
Yeah.
It's definitely
worth
a trip out there.
We'll be there.
So... Doug, who's next?
All right, next up, this one is actually from Twitter. Twitter user @CJDM1 who asks for your best strategies for getting direct numbers to C-level prospects.
Wait a second. If you're CJB1 on Twitter, why don't you use your direct name so that if a CEO wants to find you, they know it's Bob Jones?
Well, I think his name was, that's his handle. I think his name was probably
but
on
still
that
your answer. Handle should be your name. My handle's my name, @Gittimer. I don't understand why people use pseudonyms and try to be cutesy about it, because a CEO doesn't want a cute guy. They want a guy who's straightforward. Just my opinion. I could be wrong.
Okay.
What does he want to know now?
He wants to know.
He wants to know what his Twitter handle should be. No, he wants to know the best strategy for getting direct numbers to C-level prospects.
From C, he wants to get their phone number?
To get their direct number, yes.
Well, I have always used a PR department or a salesperson. I call up a company. I ask for the sales department. I say, listen, I'm in the same ball of wax that you are, and I really need your CEO's number and maybe one or two other things that I might be able to talk to him about once I get him on the phone or get her on the phone. Salespeople know everything about the CEO, including their cell phone number, and will more than happily share it with you. It may be under the caveat of please don't tell anybody. But if you call the sales guy, they know it all and they're willing to share it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also do a lot of in-person networking, and I get referrals that way because I find that if someone makes the connection for me, it's much easier than cold calling or reaching out. And so they'll give you the direct number and they'll put in a good word for you, extra good.
I'm sorry. Do you guys have examples of how to ask for that direct number?
Yeah, I call a sales guy up and I say, hey, what's the CEO's cell phone?
Just be direct.
No, I think you can say to the salesperson, there's synergy in what we do. I'd love to have lunch with you or grab a cup of coffee. It's on me. and maybe you can share contacts. If it's someone strategic, you should sit down and form a relationship with them.
No argument with that. But the overall tip is salespeople will be much more forthcoming than the admin of the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another strategy. And this strategy is one that you have to be very careful in using. Interview the CEO rather than pitch the CEO. If you have a blog and the blog is on leadership and you want to interview the CEO and his leadership principles or his business building principles or his entrepreneurial principles, that's a great thing to do. And you will then get this automatically. They'll give you a cell phone to connect with him if there's any issues or any problems.
I love that because, again, you're not selling. You're helping and you're putting them in the spotlight.
Okay, now listen. I've just given you two tips. Call the
sales
department.
Wait, I have one more.
All right.
So in true John Ruland spirit, because he was on our show earlier, if you can find something personal through their LinkedIn page
and
something memorable.
And
something they may be interested in, you can contact John. He'll help you put together the coolest gift on the planet for mm-hmm. them. And if you send it to them, it doesn't even have to be something expensive. It just has to be personal and memorable. They will likely call you back. Not direct number, but it's another option.
Well, if they call you back, sometimes you get the little caller ID and you got their direct number.
Exactly.
But I think that from a realistic sales perspective, interview the CEO, call the sales department are two of the most valuable sales tips that I can give because they even work in New York.
So create like a CEO blog where right. you do interviews, video right. interviews, right. written interviews. I love that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
All right. Next up, we have Reddit user The Drallin who asks, what would you recommend for recent graduates or people who are new to sales? Would you recommend they begin at a startup or seek out a big corporation?
Jen, what would you do?
Well, that's a toss-up. So,
all right, I'll take the opposite side.
So if you go to a startup, you have to learn fast and you have to get out there selling. They're not going to have time to get you in a room. My friend just went to Canada for 4 weeks to learn all about the products and get training and this and that. And you're just going to get thrust into it and thrown out into the field. And literally, it will be sell or die.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is if you go to work for a big corporation, they'll train you how to sell.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, which probably in this room only I was alive, Xerox was the number one sales training company in the world. And people would leave college, graduate from college, go to work for Xerox for a couple of years, learn how to sell like hell, and then quit Xerox and go someplace and get a better job. But the fact that they went to Xerox and learned that Xerox sales system, which still exists today, even though it's pretty old world, that was the benchmark at that time. So my recommendation is you go to a big corporation, sacrifice a year or two of your life, learn how to sell in that environment because it is dog eat dog. You have a quota. You either make the quota or you die.
Mm-hmm.
You have a sales boss who's probably a jerk. There's all kinds of internal politics and fighting. And if you can win in that environment, you can then go anywhere and win.
I still think it's a toss up. You could do either.
Yeah, but at the startup, by the way, they're not going to train you very well.
No, they're not.
They're going to throw you out in the field and say, here's the phone book. Start with the A's.
But if you're at a startup and you help them build all of their clients,
You'll get stock options.
Right.
Yeah.
My friend was at a startup and her clients became, she was selling ad space and her clients became Google, Microsoft, LinkedIn. I mean, she had the biggest client base on the planet and 5 years in, it was insane. She had the cushiest job on the planet and all of these huge, huge accounts that automatically renewed.
So the answer is yes.
Well, I think just from listening to you guys, it sounds like that selling in a startup is kind of baptism by fire. And maybe I don't know if you can recognize within yourself, hey, I'm not good at being baptized by fire. I need to be baptized by water and eke it out in a big corporation.
Yeah. I think no matter which one you do, even if you're getting training from a big corporation, supplement it with your own training. Read a sales book.
And by the way, if you're Jewish, being baptized by water means somebody dunks your head back in a river or something.
Oh, that's what it means. No, just kidding.
but let me just throw this at you as a word of advice to this kid. There's no best in terms of new company or existing company. Do what you think you will love. and I promise you, you'll be way better at it, whether it's brand new or 100 years old.
Thanks for all of those great questions and comments. That was awesome. I love when our Reddit users chime in and Twitter followers chime in.
You know what? They're actually, they're diehard question askers because they want real answers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they're on Reddit. That, you know,
and, you know, we'll get better each week at giving them real answers.
True. But you got to find us first, which means search for Sell or Die and go wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah, iTunes, anywhere that will give you podcast, you just have to search Sell or Die, and you can re-listen to all of these episodes when you need that sales boost of confidence.
Here's the deal. Thanks for listening to the Sell or Die podcast. We are back live next week at our regular time, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Bookmark blogtalkradio.com/sellordie and come join the conversation that's revolutionizing sales podcasting.
And thank you to our guest, the great John Rulin, Giftology, our producer, the great Doug Branson, and our technical director is the even greater Chris Hill, Daddy Chris.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell, even if your ass falls off.